I'm Bae, and you're listening to Bae Baltimore, a weekly pop culture and society podcast recorded in a quiet neighborhood in Baltimore. This episode, I just woke up, that's why my voice is so doggone deep. So hopefully it'll warm up. But I watched Zola last night in a theater downtown, or at least a little bit uptown from where I am. And I want to talk about it, duh. So this past weekend, I celebrated my birthday. And I had so much fun. I actually started a little bit early. My birthday was on Sunday, June 27th. My birthday is a week before. It's a week to the day before 4th of July. And while I don't really celebrate the 4th of July, it feels like a big, it always kind of, my birthday is like a celebration, and then the 4th of July feels like a continuation of my birthday, largely because my mama used to tell me growing up that she always, when she was pregnant with me, she wanted to hold on to me until July 4th. So I don't know. It always kind of felt like it was like my birthday kicked off the summer for my family and my immediate family in a way. And I kind of grew up with this sense that, yeah, your birthday is a celebration, but like you continue to celebrate for a little while. And I don't know if anybody else felt like that, or certainly any of the summer babies felt like that, or grew up like that. But I definitely over the years, I got the feeling that, you know, but your birthday is just the start of a celebration. And I celebrate my birthday all summer. And my hubby, whose birthday is at the beginning of August, it feels like he kind of celebrates all summer too, even though like celebrating the other folks, finding excuses to celebrate, and then leading up to his birthday. So anyway, I don't know, maybe it's just a summer birthday, a summer baby thing, who knows. But it just, my birthday always feels like the kickoff to the summer. And so anyway, I had a blast around friends, family, and just finally went to the beach, Jersey Shore, but finally made it to the beach after, I think hubby told me we hadn't, or reminded me that we hadn't been to the beach in over a year and a half, which for me, a water baby, is unusual, especially since I've been on the East Coast. I've made it a point to go to the beach every summer, just because, duh, I can, and let's go to the ocean. And so anyway, that hurt my heart last year, not being able to go, even though tons of people went anyway. It was just too doggone dangerous. And even this year, it was just really interesting. You know, folks really weren't wearing masks on the boardwalk like that, but we all had those light, you know, those light, hospital weight kind of masks. We had those on while we were up on the boardwalk, but when we were in our little area that we carved out on the beach, of course we didn't have it on. And yeah, it's like people, first off, it was a lot of black and brown people where we were, and everybody felt really well spaced out, like more spaced out than usual. On the beach, you know what I mean? Usually when you're on the beach, you kind of on top of each other a little bit, but where we were, and I always like to go, tell you a little beach secret. So usually every single regular beach, I don't like, all bets are off when it comes to like, when you go to abroad, like a beach outside of the country. But when you go, at least on the East Coast, there's always a way for you to kind of, and it seems counterintuitive, but it's so true, and it's true every single time. There's always a way for you to go just slightly to the left or slightly to the right of the boardwalk and the main place where folks end up, and you'll have so much beach to share. it's really stunningly wild how that happens, but it's true. Like, it's true at Virginia Beach, it's true at the Delaware beaches, it's true in Jersey, it's true when we went to, what was that, I don't know about Florida, I can't call Florida, but on the East Coast beaches, even when we were in Martha's Vineyard, there's a way, well, Martha's Vineyard is slightly different because it's like, you know, you have to purpose yourself to get there. Like, you got to do a number of different things to get there. Whereas Jersey and the other East Coast beaches, you just got to drive there. There's not much stopping you from getting there, but it never fails for me anyway, that we can always find a place. It's like everybody huddles in the center of the beach, but if you go to the left or when I'm saying the left or the right, what I'm saying is the most northern part, or the furthermost southern part, like the ends of the beach, you typically are cool. Like, you can find tons of space. Now, it depends on, it could be a Saturday or a Sunday, but it really depends on when you're going. Like, August, July, for the most part, it gets kind of tricky in August because everybody's trying to get at the beach. And so, you know, everybody's there. But for the most part, you can kind of find space. And so we did the same thing this year. And of course, we were at the one end of the beach and we were able to carve out ourselves a little space. And everybody was cool, spaced out and whatnot. So we enjoyed our time on the beach, and then I ran hubby ragged for like 5 days doing XYZ things that I enjoy doing. And I just want to take a moment. Not only do I want to, I'm excited about this new chapter in my life, another year, and you know, summertime is always a time for me to kind of reflect and gear up for the fall, because I spent my working life in nonprofit world. A nonprofit world, the summertime, excuse me, unless you're in child programming, like a nonprofit that offers child programming, for the most part, things slow down a bit. Like, you do have programming, but it's pretty contained and sustained. There's no real special programs in the summer because everybody's on vacation. Everybody wants to chill out. The special programming is like ending in May and beginning in September. So that June, July, August period, you're kind of just like, you know, a little relaxed. Even, you know, if you're Black Greek like I am, you know, y'all don't even meet. Or, I'm quite sure if you're a part of any other like links or any other service organization, I'm quite sure you guys do this too, but my vantage point is Black Greek and Sigma Gamma Rho Sorority Incorporated. We break. Like, our last meeting is in June, and that's really just a recap of the year meeting. It's not even a deep meeting like that, unless it's, well, no, even June of the year where you're electing new officers, June is installation meeting. So you're not doing anything heavy in that meeting. Your work is in the May meeting. You know, the elections is in the May meeting. And so anyway, June, July, August are pretty well chill. And the only thing that you really do as a chapter, and again, it depends on your fiscal year, but like, August is retreat. August is retreat month. And so even though you're assembling, you're not assembling hardcore. You know what I mean? Like, you're just coming together, doing some planning, you know, prep for the rest of the year. And then that's it. Like, it's more so fellowship opportunity, troubleshooting and things like that. So the summertime has traditionally been super lazy, not super lazy, but super relaxed for me. And so I'm not expecting the summer to be any different than that. But the difference is, like, I'm going through life changes, Obviously, I've talked about this before, but I'm still actively on the fertility tip, where hubby and I are going through a bunch of different things to ensure that we can become parents, and it has been full of ups and downs. And certainly it hasn't gone as quickly as I thought it would go, but it's going pretty normally, according to my doctors. So, I'm pretty geeked about some of the prospects that are coming up in my career, in my sorority life. I'm just excited and having a ball at looking at my niece and one of my sets of nieces and nephews who are just growing and coming into themselves and being just precious. While some of my other nieces, actually I have a bunch of nieces, few nephews, but a bunch of nieces. And anyway, you know, growing and some having kids of their own, which isn't too terrible because the thing about it is the age ranges in my family are extreme. So I'm the youngest, right? I'm the youngest at 38. I'm 38 this year. I'm 38 right now. But the oldest is 55. So yeah, there's a big age range. We're a blended family. But the type of blend we are is everybody is either connected to my dad or connected to my mama. And one of my brothers, we have the same parents, so we're blended down. And it's taken a long time for us to get to a place where we are like tight, you know what I mean? Like healed to overcome some trouble and things like that. So I just, it's been kind of awkward, honestly, because in the overcoming overcoming some of the trials that we've been through, there were years, nearly a decade, where I didn't talk to any of my siblings because they weren't connected to one of my parents. You know what I mean? Which makes it awkward for the child because you're just here. You're just here. You don't have you want everybody to get along, but at the same time, you cannot control the arc of the relationship between your parent, one of your parents, and that one sibling. You can't control it. And even when the family is quote unquote nuclear, right? And everybody grew up in the same household, you still cannot control the relationship that your siblings have to your parents. And so I think for me, the most interesting thing that I've been trying to settle into is figuring out, navigating how I can maintain relationships with my parents and also grow and maintain relationships with my siblings. Some of them are better than others, even though I didn't grow up in the same house with them. Like my eldest brother, thick as thieves, he's a Kappa. And of course I'm SG Row, so we're tight like that too, but we also have very similar personalities in a lot of ways. And so we're thick as thieves. I need to grow to be thick and tight with some of my other siblings, who I didn't grow up with, but that's just gonna take time. It's just gonna take even more time than we've already spent, even more time and even more energy, but I'm up for the challenge and it seems like they're up for it too. So that's half the battle. And so, yeah, so, you know, I'm at a really great place in my life right now. A lot of prospects are opening up. I don't know. I'm just energized. And anyway, so I'm in a really great mood and I'm really trying to be safe. And again, you know, 4th of July is coming up by the time this thing drops. 4th of July is right around the corner. And, you know, maybe about a month ago, like they said that there would be no fire. Well, actually, longer than a month ago, it was like 2 months ago they announced there would be no fireworks in the harbor. And if you're from the Baltimore area, if you're from Baltimore, you know that they if you know what I'm talking about. But if you're not from Baltimore, every 4th of July, there's a barge that gets out in the middle of the harbor, not the middle of the harbor, the working part. It's out closer to the working part of the harbor over by Domino Sugar. Google Baltimore's harbor and you'll see exactly. You'll see Domino Sugar. You'll see the working part of the harbor. And then you'll see you see pictures of the touristy part of the harbor as well. And anyway, so every July 4th, when the sun really goes down, so probably about 9:15, something like that. What time do the... It's not 8:30. It's closer to like... Hold on. Let me find out. Oh, boy. Yes. Oh, actually. So the sun sets tonight. The sun sets. This is tonight of the day before release day. My bad. The sun sets here at about 8:36. So July 4th, it'll be closer to like 8:40, something like that. I think it's like a couple of minutes every day. It's a little bit later. So anyway, the fireworks will probably start. And this probably is true for where you live too. You don't have to be on the water, but definitely maybe 10, 15 minutes after sunset, the fireworks begin. Or maybe it's like right at 9, like even though the sun is set, 9 o'clock or whatever is when the fireworks begin. And so usually about 9 o'clock in the harbor, there's a big barge, and Google a barge if you're not in a shipping city, seaside, or you're not in a city that has like a harbor. A big, when I'm saying like a barge, it's like a big old boat that is not a passenger boat. So a lot of people can't be, you can't hold people on it. It's meant to hold stuff. It's meant to move products, and even product in big shipping containers. And so they get this big barge and they fill it instead of shipping containers and stuff like that. Well, not a big barge, but anyway, instead of filling it with shipping containers, they fill it with fireworks, big old pyrotechnics and stuff like that. And they shoot it off, and it's the most wonderful thing ever. It's also definitely loud. Because in years past, we would go up, and I think I'm sure I've talked about this before. I'm sure I have on this show. Hubby and I would go up to Druid Hill Park. And again, Google Baltimore. It's the oldest park, I believe, in the country. No, the oldest park in Baltimore. One of the first segregated parks in Baltimore, or desegregated parks in Baltimore. It's probably pretty old as parks go on the East Coast as well. But nevertheless, it was initially created for rich people who just wanted to go play tennis in their long old Victorian outfits, heavy old Victorian outfits, and be famous and stuff, or be sadiddy. But anyway, so we would usually go to at Druid Hill Park. There's a little, what do you call that thing? Oh, shoot. It's older than that. Oh, it's much older than that. Even though it turned into like a little play area for Victorian well-to-do people of Baltimore. It was the vantage point that in the War of 1812, even before the War of 1812, it was where the Star Spangled Banner. So blah, 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 Star Spangled Banner. Francis Scott Key wrote the Star Spangled Banner, and he was in the Baltimore Harbor in the belly of a ship, actually, because he was in jail. As the story goes. And anyway, in the belly of this ship where he was being detained, he wrote the Star Spangled Banner. And anyway, in homage to that, everybody, blah, blah, blah. That's not my point. My point was, there's a vantage point. Oh my gosh, how easily I get sidetracked. If you are new to this show, I get sidetracked like a son of a gun. There's lots of twists and turns in my story. Not unlike the movie I'm going to talk about today, Zola. Anyway, but there's a particular vantage point that was in existence when the Star Spangled Banner was written. And I think it was the War of 1812 for real. I think it was the War of 1812, although the park is much older than that. Anyway, there's a particular vantage point that is, the construction makes it feel like it was something like a barracks, something like a part of an outpost where something like that, something like a place that you would hide behind and either shoot cannons or hide from cannons. And you'd be on this porch and be lookout, because at this vantage point at the park, you can see all the way down in the harbor. Now, the thing that obstructs your view these days from the total harbor is, from seeing the total harbor, including the working part of the harbor, is the buildup of the buildings, right? A whole bunch of buildings that were constructed in the 1920s when folks had money and they were just throwing up, like rich folks had money and they were throwing up all these beautiful buildings, many of which are still standing today and are historic. But anyway, if those buildings didn't exist, you'd have a perfectly clear view of the entire harbor from this vantage point in Druid Hill. And everybody who knows what they're talking about goes to Druid Hill to watch the fireworks if you don't want to go down in the harbor itself. I have never been in the harbor for 4th of July, because even at Druid Hill, it is dumb loud. Dumb loud in the harbor. It's dumb loud back in. It sounds like somebody fighting. There's a battle happening, which in many ways, that's what, you know, fireworks are due to mimic. But anyway, I can't even imagine how deafeningly loud it is in the harbor. And the funny thing about all of this is hubby and I live even closer. We live downtown, essentially. We're in the I keep saying this incorrectly, but we're in the Bromo Seltzer district, which is the theater district. Couple blocks up from Oriole Park, a few more blocks up from Raven Stadium. And anyway, the harbor, if you put look up Baltimore on a map, that's downtown. That's in the harbor, essentially, what I'm talking about. It's downtown, and it might as well be in the harbor. We're a few blocks from the harbor water. And so I've never been. We've never lived this close. Well, hubby has, because he's from Baltimore. I've not, in my over a decade of being here. And I have no idea how loud it's going to be, but I have a suspicion that if it's loud, even where we lived before, you could hear the fireworks. You could also hear the fireworks in Dundalk a little bit. Maybe not hear them so much, but as you can see them really well. Hear and see the fireworks in Northwest Baltimore and all of that. But it was always loud where we were, so I could only imagine how deafeningly loud it's going to be now. So they had spent, and let me circle back around, they had spent, and when I'm saying they, I'm talking about Baltimore, spent some months saying AFRAM is canceled, Artscape is canceled, we're not doing fireworks in the harbor, we're not doing any of the cultural fests, and Baltimore is full of cultural fests. We're not doing any of the cultural fests that we used to do because it's too doggone dangerous in COVID. Well, then, you know, a couple of weeks ago, everybody began to lift, including Mayor Scott, who's been very conservative about the restrictions here in the city, began to lift them just like everybody else. Even though the Delta variant is making its way across the United States, especially even to vaccinated people, we don't know how it impacts the. I'm not 100% familiar with how it impacts people who are vaccinated, fully vaccinated. Does it just make you sick, but not hospitalization sick? Because that was what they were saying, that if you contracted COVID post being fully vaccinated, you could still have symptoms, but you won't need to go to the hospital. It'll just take some time to get over it. And so, you know, like, even though that's still something lurking around, you know, things are opening up. And so I don't know then if the organizers of AFRAM are going to circle back around and try to put something together. I don't know if the organizers for Artscape are going to be like, my bad, psych, come on back, everybody. You know what I mean? I feel like even though Artscape is in July and no, AFRAM is in late July and Artscape is in August. One of the two. Anyway, it's we're approaching July 1 now, even though, you know, we're short on time. I have a feeling that if you hustle, you can get that thing together. So we'll see if these things come back. And I think I heard that we are going to have fireworks in the harbor this year. So again, that's why I'm talking about it. We'll see. But anyway, so I'm just trying to get up with the fun things that are happening, despite those things that they said have been canceled in the area, just because we had Juneteenth celebrations. Now, mind you, most folks wore masks and things like that, and we were properly socially distanced, but I can't say that it was a city-sanctioned sort of thing. It wasn't really, although, no, it wasn't, we weren't in the street. They didn't block off anything in the street. Everything was, all the vendors were on the sidewalk. So did I see city vehicles? Maybe, I definitely saw police officers there to assist, but streets weren't really blocked off like that. So I can't say that it was a city sanctioned thing, although they probably definitely had to get permits in order to participate. But anyway, yeah, so we'll see. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, I have been chomping at the bit to engage with media and movies that have been teased. And one of the movies that I have been chomping at the bit to watch ever since it was announced, like, I think when it was first announced that they were going to film it, I was like, oh, okay, we'll see how this goes. And then when I saw the trailer for it, I was like, oh, I'm not going to see how this goes. We finna watch this thing. I think when I watched the trailer for Zola, I think it had to have been April. I definitely announced it on the show. I definitely said it on the show. It was probably April. Definitely by May, I had known that Zola was finna drop at the end of June. But I saw the trailer, and I got to be honest with you, between the first time I saw the trailer up until I saw the movie, I must have seen the trailer at least 10, 11 times because it was so intriguing because I remember the Twitter storm that was the story. And if you remember too, if you're around my age, you remember it too. It was literally called The Story and everybody was talking about it. I was of the camp that this thing isn't real, but like, it's still whomever is writing this, whoever Zola is super talented, super creative. And, you know, you had filmmakers. I think I read something somewhere recently, because I was reading articles about that time frame. And certainly I had read an article, and you could Google this. I read an article. Who was it from? It was like a big... The Rolling Stone. There's an article from the Rolling Stone that was written about the story. And again, it was called hashtag the story. Is Isaiah. I think Zola's real name is Isaiah, something like that. But it's Zola for short. And they had sent a reporter to interview Zola and her family and get the real story. But the really interesting thing about this article, and I think it was from, so the Twitter, the story, Zola's story, the Twitter feed came out in the fall of 2014. And this article came out in the spring of 2015. And so it was months later after this whole thing happened. And so the Rolling Stone writer had the opportunity to talk to not only Zola and her family, but then also hear from, what's the old girl's name? And it's interesting because I'm I'm getting the names confused because Zola was the right... Taylor Page played Zola in the movie, and it's the character's name remained Zola. But the other names of the actors who played the other players in this story, their names are changed, and I don't know why their names are... Oh, their names are changed because those are their real names. My bad. Or allegedly their real names. So, okay, so how can I not get confused? Okay, so the real people are Zola, whose real name is Isaiah something. I'll get it in a second. Isaiah Wells. I don't know where you get Zola from if your name is Isaiah. Anyway, but I don't know where you get what is it? Dick from Richard. Dottie from Dorothy. Although Dottie kind of makes sense, but what is it? There's just really it's the Dick from Richard. Like, how do you get Dick from Richard? It makes no sense. How do you get, what is it? There's another one. I was talking with somebody the other day about nicknames from full names. Connie. Being short for, no, Connie is short for Constance. I don't know. I can't think of it about it. But anyway, it's just interesting how some people have pet names or nicknames that are supposed to be diminutives of your full name. But when you get to the full name, it's like, that doesn't sound like that. Lottie, Loretta. Okay, I get that. Not really, because where's the lot come from? Wouldn't it be lore? Like Dottie, you know what I mean? Dottie makes sense because it's Dorothy. Anyway, whatever, it's fine. What was I? Oh, so anyway. So Zola, easily sidetracked. Thank you so much for listening. If you're a first time listener, I pull myself back. Sometimes I remember to pull myself back on time, but sometimes it takes a minute. Anyway, but thank you so much for listening. And if you've been back, if this is not your first time listening to the show, hey, welcome back. I appreciate you immensely. And thank you so much for sharing this show and helping me spread the reach of this thing. Still very much a hobby that I do. So I really appreciate you. Anyway, so Zola is her nickname, but it's Isaiah Wells. And so Taylor Page plays Zola. But the other actors in this movie play fictitious characters or characters who favor the real life folks. But this story by and large is told, almost exclusively from Zola's perspective, but there is a moment where her counterpart, briefly shares her side of the story. But nevertheless, in the article, the Rolling Stone article that I read, that was a couple of months after the story was released by Zola. Her companion, the girl that sent this, the white girl that sent her on the trip, was named Jessica. And Jessica's boyfriend was named Jarrett. And Jessica and Jarrett's roommate, and I'm using that term, put air quotes around it, I'm using it very loosely. Their roommate was named Z, and he was Nigerian. And I think I had missed that note. I forgot that Z was supposed to be Nigerian until I saw the film. And I was like, oh, shoot. Yeah, that's right. I had forgotten that interesting detail. But in the film, Riley Keough plays Stephanie, which is supposed to be Jessica. Nicholas Braun plays Derek, which is supposed to be Jared. And Cole Domingo plays X, which is supposed to be Z. And Ariel Stachel plays Sean, who I think actually is Zola's, I think her husband now. They have a child together. And Jason Mitchell, let me pause for a second. Jason Mitchell, I thought he was trifling on the set of The Chi. Am I confused? Jason Mitchell is in here. And hold on, let me Google this. Jason Mitchell played on Eazy-E in Straight Outta Compton. And he played in Mudbound. But I also thought he got in trouble on The Chi. I'm sorry, I'm reading stuff. My bad. I thought he also got in trouble on The Chi for being trifling. And what I'm saying, being trifling, he's sexually harassed. I thought this was the guy that sexually harassed. Oh, controversies. Let me go to controversies. Yup. Man, there is no such thing as cancel culture. This man, I'm mad that he was in this film. And I'm glad that what happened to his character happened, because why is he even getting work in this glorious film that is surely going to do numbers? Anyway, in May 2019, Mitchell was fired from The Chi when showrunners Ayanna Floyd Davis and Lena Waithe and co-star Tiffany Boone accused him of misconduct. Mitchell was subsequently fired from the Netflix film Desperados and was dropped from United Talent Agency and Authentic Talent and literally and Authentic Talent and Literary Management. He was arrested in 2020 on various include drugs and weapons charges. Okay, so he didn't went down. He went from 2019 to 2020. He didn't went down. But nevertheless, in that time, he had managed to film. Ugh, anyway, that's frustrating. That is so frustrating. Ugh, anyway. I'm glad what happened to his character happened to his character then. But still, it's very frustrating. Ain't no such thing as cancel culture. And forget anything please forget anything that Kevin Hart was talking about. I am not watching that film. I don't care how great it is. I'm not watching it because I don't want to support him. And if I'd have known, I don't know that I would not have supported Zola if I'd have known that Jason Mitchell was in it. But like, I don't want to support trifling people. I really don't. And there's no such thing as cancel culture. It's people. Cancel culture is individual. It's not even a culture. It's just a thing that people are deciding to do. And some people decide to divest from trifling people like myself. And then some people decide not to. But it's not a collective community thing. And I'm not the only one that's saying this. I know a ton of people are saying the same thing. But there's really no such thing as cancel culture. Like, even, I'm not going to spend more time on these trifling people than necessary, but like the Harvey Weinsteins of the world, them being caught and being, you know, brought to justice, it's not normal. That's abnormal. And we all know this. Remember DSM? What was that man's name? He was the head of the IMF bank, and he was just... There's a documentary about one woman that kind of blew up his spot forever and really changed the, you know, really knocked him off his high horse, his trifling high horse, and probably prevented a whole lot of other women from being messed with by this trifling person. I can't remember, but it's DSM. I can't remember. Dominic Strauss. I can't remember the rest of his name. But anyway, he was IMF, head of the IMF, and was embroiled in this huge scandal. It all stemmed from a New York hotel. And anyway, on Hulu, there is a little, there's a documentary about that particular incident and what it led to. And how, man, if you are the victim, the onus is on you to prove that you were victimized, which is trifling. And again, even then, there's no such thing as cancel culture, because anyway, Kevin Hart is stupid. Don't participate in it. Ugh, anyway, you can do what you want. But anyway, cancel culture isn't real. Cut it out. Like, it's just some people are held accountable and they really can't come back from the foolishness that they felt that they were invincible enough to do. Whatever. Anyway, I didn't mess around and got mad. Let me focus. Anyway, let me just focus on the four characters, the main four. So Taylor Page plays Zola. Riley Kehoe plays Stephanie, who is Jessica in real life. Nicholas Braun plays Derek, who is Jared in real life. Jared, who is Jessica's boyfriend, and Cole Domingo plays X, which is really Z in real life, which he's actually, well, he turns out to be a pimp. He's something like a pimp, a Nigerian pimp, which his country origin has really is kind of irrelevant. I think it's, the only thing about it is it's interesting. Yeah, it's not even really interesting because on the East Coast, one of the things that I've been learning since being in Baltimore, specifically in Baltimore, is that the East Coast is it's a melting pot, number one. So there are tons of people from different countries who come to the United States and set root here, but they never really leave the East Coast because the East Coast really is where it's at. Let's be for real. Anyway, but one of the things, and I'm going to, in a second, I'm going to start talking about the film. But one of the things that I learned is like in New York and Baltimore and probably Philly too, like New York City. When I'm saying New York, I'm talking about the city. So New York City, Philly, and Baltimore, there's a pipeline. And I've talked about this before, but there's a scam that happens where human traffickers pick up, they basically goop Eastern European young girls coming over here for like on a work visa or on like a study visa, coming here for something else, and they goop them at the airport. And somehow or another, and there's, go on YouTube, you will literally just fall into stories from women from the Ukraine, women from Russia, women from a small, like Uzbekistan, like not Uzbekistan, a small Eastern European country whose people are they're of modest means, but they're sending their kid to the United States because, you know, they want them to get a chance. And these young women end up in sex trafficking situations. It's not as difficult as you think it is, because if you consider that sex traffickers are master manipulators. And so there's an element of this in Zola that I wasn't expecting. I'll say this. There's an element of sex trafficking in Zola that I didn't realize was there when I read the story. When I was reading this story, I think I was so focused on the fact that I just thought it was so fantastical that it wasn't real, that I didn't look at the elements of the story. And actually, if you read the Rolling Stone article, Zola herself says that she embellished aspects of the story, but the main idea of the story is still the same. She went down to Florida. She was from Detroit. She met Jessica in Detroit at her job. They took a trip from Detroit to Tampa, Florida, and she basically went on a trip with another dancer, the dancer's boyfriend, and a pimp. And what ensued in the next 48 hours was something like a fever dream of a weird situation. And yes, she embellished aspects of it. She admitted it in the article because she said, you know, you forget. People were responding to her. It was like 140 character texts, which 140 tweets, which I think that was the first time that anybody had really done something like that. Like everybody remembers when Kanye tweeted. Remember that one time that he went berserk and tweeted, like had a Twitter storm and was just talking stuff, and everybody made like, it was wild. Everybody was talking about it, or at least folks that were connected to social media were talking about it like at length, because it was just ridiculous, because the amount of energy that it takes for you to, if you've ever tried to write a Twitter, everybody does a Twitter thread these days, right? But the amount, if you've ever done a Twitter thread, you know that it takes some energy for you to write the thread and to make it cohesive and make it make sense. And most of the threads these days are maybe 20 tweets. You know what I'm saying? And 20 tweets is a lot. 20 tweets back in 2014 was a lot. And people weren't really doing it like that. But 140? That's a whole day's journey. And in that time, Zola said that while she was writing the tweets, she was responding to people being geeked about what, girl, what's happening in real time. So obviously it made her want to embellish or blow up aspects of the story, but nevertheless, the story itself was still very true. And so anyway, so, and again, I just thought it was so fantastical. And I think, I can't remember, I know for a fact I didn't listen to the entire story, which is again, or read the entire story, which is again, another reason why I think I missed the human trafficking element of it. Also, I was still very much not evolved as I wanted to be as a woman, as I am now as a woman, and I still very much was victim blaming back in that time frame. So I didn't really have much sympathy for Zola. I did not have any sympathy for Jessica. I just thought Derek was just doing what he did. You know what I mean? I don't, in the fullness of time and more maturity and more information at my fingertips and having engaged with, and I'm very passionate about anti-human trafficking legislation and organizations who devote themselves to helping rescue women and girls. Well, actually, not even women and girls. I'm using the term women with an X on the end. So women and girls and people who identify as non-binary and boys and trans folks, because it's less about the how this person identifies and more about these predators preying on vulnerable people. Again, I just told you there's a whole pipeline for trafficking in the United States, for trafficking girls from Europe, from Eastern Europe, those small communities and towns from Eastern Europe, and they don't speak any English. Many of them do not speak any English, and that's why they're coming to the United States, because they're on some like education thing, or it's a total lie how they're coming down here. They're believing a lie that they're coming to the United States through New York to do something, and it ends up being something else. One story that I cannot remember who said it, but it's a woman who was caught up in this trafficking. It was human trafficking, but it wasn't for sex work. That's the other thing about it. So there's a human trafficking doesn't just include sex work. A lot of the times, in many cases, some of these vulnerable people are trafficked to be cleaners in houses and apartments and stuff. And that's something that, and I know I've talked about this before. I feel like I talked about it 2 years ago. When I was in a little bit. I think I actually told the story when I was in my episode a couple of years ago, when we, something about 95. If you go through my episodes, go through my episode list. I think it was from 2019, and it was definitely around the summertime. I can't remember, but I definitely talk about human trafficking, because I think that was when I had just started working with human trafficking organizations. And I had combined my love for my sorority and our service work with being passionate about supporting anti-human trafficking organizations. And so anyway, I think I talked about the fact that there's a whole industry. I told this one particular woman's story, and I pointed you to who she was so that you can hear it from her. But yeah, there's a whole element of human trafficking that is not sex related. It's not sex work related. But nevertheless, there is still a bigger part of the element of human trafficking that is sex work and forced sex work. So, well, all of it is forced. All of it is forced. It goes without saying. But the human trafficking piece is these controlling, mostly male people, or male identifying people, are targeting folks who are vulnerable due to their age, the language that they speak, or the lack of their control, the command of English, and their lack of resources. And so they control them in a weird way. And again, the woman, if you find that episode, like I said, I believe it's from 2019. Maybe it's from 2018, now that I'm thinking about it. She goes into detail, and again, I point you to her. She goes into detail how she was monetarily indebted to these folks, and but for being rescued, she definitely didn't see herself getting out of that cycle. And again, she was not sex trafficked. She was a domestic, basically. She was trafficked as a domestic. And she didn't realize she was being trafficked as a domestic until she was taken. Literally, they got her from JFK at airport. That's how cold-blooded and quick they are. They literally picked her up from JFK Airport. She had just got off the plane from where she was coming from. And that's how they got her. And that's how they get them. That's how they get you. They know exactly where you're your most vulnerable. And anyway, so I didn't realize, going back to Zola, I didn't even realize there was a human trafficking element here until I, even when I reread the Twitter storm, because you can still find the Twitter storm. I think it's a, I don't know how you can read it now, but somebody's put it on Tumblr. Somebody put it, I don't know. You can find it though if you Google it. If you haven't already done that. But no, so yeah, I think I started to get a little bit more of that sense. Excuse me, rereading the tweets, but it definitely drove home that point when I watched the film, because even though this was supposed to be something like a dark comedy, the film itself is definitely a dark comedy. But yeah, there's some serious conversations that are happening here. So in the next segment, I think I'm going to talk in a big fat circle. If you had not read the Twitter storm that was hashtag the story by Zola, please read that before listening to this other half. Or if you don't care, just listen and do your tasks that you were doing. But yeah, in the next segment, I'm just going to talk all about what jumped out to me, the story itself. And then, yeah, just wrap it up. Okay, so by now, hopefully you've read the 140 tweet thread that was the story back in 2014, and you are ready to hear me talk about the film. So I've already told you who the players were. In the film, though, how am I going to do this? Okay, and I'm just going to go by their movie names. So it's Zola, Stephanie, Derek, and X. And Sean. And Zola was, at the time, she was like 18, 19, something like that, being a waitress, working as a waitress in Hooters in Detroit. And she meets, while she's at work, she meets, in the movie standard, she meets Stephanie. And Stephanie identifies as bi, and there's an attraction. I don't know if it's a mutual attraction, because it's not 100% clear if Zola herself is bi, but there's an attraction there. They're both sexual beings, and there's an attraction there. In the movie, the way that they describe this meeting is basically saying Stephanie was initially attracted to Zola because she was beautiful, and then from being attracted to her, she gets an understanding that she's seen Zola around before, that her face is familiar to her, and they both learned that they were both dancers. And pausing here, it didn't occur to me, because I've never been to a strip club in my life. I have never known a dancer unless they just didn't disclose. So I never understood the age of dancers. But yeah, that's 18. Some people are probably lying and they're really 17. But dancer ages in the clubs tend to be the young 20 somethings, 18 and 20, early 20 somethings. And then of course you can be older, but definitely what they recruit, it's clear that what they recruit is that younger, there's a age range that they recruit. And so anyway, they had danced, and Zola had danced many times before, and so they vibed on the, you know, they commiserated on the "we both are dancers" tip, and talked about how even in Detroit, they made a lot of money by night, especially the prettier you are, I don't even understand how the standards work, but basically, if you fit the look, whatever the look is, for where you're dancing, you gonna get paid. And so they were making, I can't remember if Zola in the movie said how much she was making. I can't remember if they really got to that, except that in the story, Zola was making something like $1,000 a night at one of the local places that she was dancing at, but that she didn't do it routinely. And that Jessica also probably made some money like that too, but that in their initial conversation, Jessica was basically priming her for at some point taking a trip down to Florida to make even more money. Now let me pause right here. Florida is, I've always known, even though I've never been to a strip club, I've known women who were sex workers, but I didn't know them while they were, at least I didn't know that I knew them while they were sex workers. And I don't know if they had also danced too. I don't know that, but I definitely know that they were sex workers. And I've known I think I met the first woman who openly shared with me that she was a sex worker, and that she also, at the same time she told me that she had been a sex worker for many years, she also told me that she had been struggling with addiction the same amount of time. And that was the first time that, it was the first time that I realized that there was a connection between drug abuse and the sex industry. Up until that point, I was the type of woman that believed, oh, women did it because that's what they wanted to do and they chose to do that. But this was the first woman that I ever met. I can't even remember her name. Not that I would say it on here, but I can't even remember her name right now. But I definitely remember she looked like Peppa. She looked a lot like Peppa. She sounded like what Peppa sounds like when she talks, because they're from the Newark. She was from Newark and New Jersey area. To me, she reminded me of Salt and Pepper because that was my vantage, my reference point. But I cannot remember her name right now. But again, I wouldn't say it anyway. But she was the first person that had helped me to understand that sometimes women are in the game to feed an addiction, and that addiction started for a number of different reasons. I actually met two women who were in sex work. One woman, I think she stopped short of saying that she had been trafficked. She stopped short of that. Both of them said that they were in some abusive relationships and some toxic relationships at times, but that they both went out of their way to make it clear that it was their decision to go into sex work, and that they worked at their pleasure to feed their habit. I didn't know the questions to ask. I certainly didn't have the knowledge I have now to ask more probing questions, since they were being open with me, just to have a better understanding. But looking back, I think if I had to do it over again, I would probably ask, like, how did you even fall into it? Because we never really got to that place. It was just, I got hooked and I needed to feed my habit, so this is what I did. But we never really talked about how they got hooked, and never really talked about, we talked about the experiences, but never like the funny experiences, the harrowing experience, but we never really talked about, I never really truly understood like the why behind that. And again, I met them when they were no longer doing it. And by the time I met them, they were like at least 5 years out from, they were at least 5 years clean, and they were at least 5 years out the game. So going back to Zola and understanding how that, you know, Stephanie was like, next time I'm going to Florida, you gonna come with me, right? And Zola's like, yeah. And the reason, Florida is a big place in human trafficking. It's definitely, and again, when I'm talking about human trafficking, I'm talking about all the ways in which you can dupe or goop someone and then trap them into a situation that they don't necessarily want to stay in, but it's beneficial for you, the trapper. So anyway, it's something about the 95 corridor that wherever you're from, and I guess I didn't realize that if you were from the Midwest that you would go to Florida too, but I guess it's a change of scenery. And certainly Zola in her Twitter, the story feed or the story thread, she talks about, you know, sometimes you just gotta sometimes when you want to make a little bit more money because you can't make the same amount of money or you can't make more money with the locals that you're frequenting now, you got to go out of, you got to go away. And so I just don't know why from Detroit, Florida was a good move. But I do understand why on the East Coast, why if you're in Baltimore, Philly, Newark, New York City, that you would, even up further north, Boston, that you would go further south and all the way to Florida, because number one, it's the 95 corridor. It's a straight shot. You could literally drive down there, which is again what Zola X, Stephanie and Derek did. They drove like something like 20 hours, which is true, because it feels right that it would be 20 hours from Detroit to Florida, because from Baltimore to my parents' house in Missouri is 17 and a half. So, yep, that's cross country. Sounds about right. Or at least to the center of the country. Sounds about right. So anyway, and from New York to Florida, I have no idea. Oh, excuse me. I have no idea how long it takes to get from New York to Florida, but I just know that the 95 corridor is notorious for taking women from the New York area and spiriting them away to Baltimore, directly to Baltimore or to Philly, and spiriting people from Baltimore directly to the Carolinas, many times it's South Carolina, or straight down to Florida. That's a part of the, if you go down the 95 corridor, and again, in that episode that I was talking to you about, I think it was either 2019 or 2018, I talk about the statistics, and even if you look at the statistics now, I'm sure they're quite the same. There are pockets in North Carolina, South Carolina, definitely Baltimore. Baltimore and D.C. are places where people are tucked away in human trafficking. Definitely Philly, definitely Newark, and of course, New York. People are tucked away. And then further south, I'm quite sure there are places in Georgia where people are tucked away, but Florida ends up being a great spot to steal people away from even a place that they were becoming somewhat familiar with and really tuck people away in the trafficking game. And I don't quite understand why, other than distance and the fact that Florida is super touristy, and there's a market and there's a lot of vacation homes there. So in all the myriad ways that you can traffic a human being to do whatever, there's, like, again, with the cleaning place, I cannot stress to you enough that be mindful when you are taking in someone who's cleaning your home. Be mindful where they're coming from, because it's too easy. Like, again, like, especially in the cleaning industry, a lot of folks who can afford cleaners, folks coming in their homes to clean, they don't really spend too much time getting to know folks who are coming in their house to clean. They don't, and which is why it makes it too easy to do that sort of thing. And then again, forcing a person to dance or into sex work, the people that's paying the money for them to dance or the people that is paying money for them to do sex work, they're about getting what they're paying for more than they're concerned about where these people are coming from and whether or not they're here against their will, which is a shame on us, right? That's an indictment on us. But anyway, let me get back to this whole thing. So anyway, they were going to go dance in Florida. And so Stephanie in the movie, Jessica in real life, was like, yep, next time I dance in Florida, I want you to come with me. And Zola being young and Stephanie being young too, it's like, it's whatever. We don't have attachments. I don't have a kid, even though Stephanie had a kid that Zola comes to learn later. Zola wasn't the only attachment that she had was her boyfriend. And there's this really funny part in the movie where she's like, and I had forgotten this in the thread, but her boyfriend was cool with her dancing, but was not cool with her driving all the way to Florida to dance, right? Like, why did that knock over? Anyway, she wasn't cool with her driving all the way to Florida to dance. But anyway, so she basically had to please him, to sexually please him in order to be able to be let go. And I just thought that was funny. Because he was like, oh, okay, I'm cool. Whatever. So anyway, so she goes and she hops in the car. And this, in the movie, it's a, what is the emblem? Oh, where's hubby when I need him? Shoot. It's like a sport wagon, but it's like a fancy black sport wagon. What's that emblem? Is it a BMW? What is the three? Anyway, it's like a BMW. Or Mercedes. Maybe it was Mercedes. Anyway, I don't know emblems of sports cars or fancy cars. Anyway, maybe it was a Mercedes. It was like a Mercedes wagon, like a Jeep looking thing, but it's not a Jeep, it's a wagon. Anyway, and so Derek, Stephanie, Zola, and X are barreling down the road, going to Florida, geeked up. It's Friday and they leave and they're having fun hanging out. And then remember, they're driving 20 hours. So it's like Friday morning that they're leaving. And the movie, oh, let me pause. So in the movie, it's like a day later, like a day or two later. And in actuality, it was probably like a day or two later too. Like a couple of days after Zola and Stephanie meet, Stephanie calls Zola and is like, come on through. I'm about to go to the spot to dance. You need to come on with me. And so Zola packs up her stuff. And for the weekend, she's going to go dancing and she's going to come back and make this money. And again, she made $1,000 a night where she was. And so the idea was, let's go to Florida and make even more money because there's a lot of clubs out there and we can get this thing accomplished. So that's what starts the journey. Why Derek went along, I have no idea. Why Derek, at least initially X, who was called Z in real life, he's very clearly seemed like the connect, right? The person that was making these connections to these clubs. And so initially, sure, it made sense why he was going. Obviously, Stephanie is a dancer too, so it made sense why she was going. And then of course Zola was going with her because she was a dancer, right? But why Derek was there, I have no idea, other than he just didn't want to leave. He was codependent and he didn't want to leave Stephanie's side. To this day, even though I've watched the movie, I can't tell you why Derek went. Zola don't even know why Derek went. And even though real life, Jessica was able to share her story, she never really explained why Jared, real life Jared, was there, who's Derek in the film. Anyway, so they're on this trip, they're having fun, blah, 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 blue. A 20-hour car ride is a 20-hour car ride. So maybe the first 10 hours, you're geeked, you're having fun, but by 2 a.m., you ready to get where you're going. Right? By midnight, I'm sick of driving. I'm sick of being in the car. I'm sick of being in the car with y'all. I want to be where we said that we was finna be. So anyway, there's a point at which Zola becomes a little bit weary of the people she's traveling with. Specifically, she becomes weary of Stephanie, because Stephanie begins to recount this story of this dancer that she was with that was just dirty. And yeah, she was just dirty. And she was talking, the way she was talking about her, talking about her nappy hair and being dirty. And clearly the girl that she was talking about was black and Stephanie is white. And this was the first inclination that Zola was like, so I'm tired. And now you're getting on my nerves because now you're talking about this woman and you're talking about her having nappy hair. This is not, I don't really like where this conversation is going. I want you to watch your mouth. Like, definitely Zola gives off this watch your mouth vibes. And everybody in my theater, and it wasn't a ton of people in my theater. We were all socially distant and spaced, but maybe there were 20 people in the theater that would normally hold 100, maybe 150 people. There were like 20 people in my particular theater. And anyway, everybody was laughing because we were all like, and it was mostly Black people, by the way. Definitely a lot of folks who, it would not surprise me if there were queer folks in here, if there were trans folks that were in there supporting Maddie, because that's what I meant to say. I got sidetracked by trifling dude, but I meant to say that Madison, T.S. Madison, famous trans personality, is in this film, and she has a cameo in the very first strip club, or the strip club that Zola and Stephanie are being taken to, X is taking them to. She's something like a dancer, and anyway, there's a prayer that is a part of the trailer. But anyway, it's just funny. It's really, really funny because it's Maddie at her finest. And if you've listened to the Queen Supreme Court, or Maddie now has a show that I have not watched, but anyway, Maddie is a character. Maddie's pretty funny. And so anyway, this was a perfect role for Maddie because Maddie was a sex worker herself for many years, and she's talked about that over the years. And so she's talked about the perils of sex work, especially sex work as a trans woman. And she's also been a very vocal advocate about trans safety, especially Black trans women's safety because by and large, Black trans women are the most targeted women. Black women, women in general are targeted, right? Definitely targeted by men. Black women, or women, well, women of color are targeted. Black women are very highly targeted, right? And then you add on top of it Black trans women who often, I can't even speak super intelligently on this subject. Again, I will say what I always say, which is to point you to talking about, listening to Marsha's Plate. And because they talk really smartly about that. But what I will say is you don't have to be a trans person to get that Black trans women, especially in the United States, but trans people all over, are targeted and get a lot of ire because, and a lot of hatred because men can't deal with their attraction to a trans woman. Somehow or another, that means that they're somehow or another gay and whatever. And so instead of dealing with their own deep-seated emotions about that and getting the healing that they need to overcome that, they end up taking their embarrassment, their fear out on these trans women. And it's probably not the only reason, but like it's a huge reason what we're knowing, or what we know is that a lot of Black trans women are perishing at the hands of some cowardly men who take their own frustration and confusion about who they are, their own identity, out on these women. And so T.S. Madison spends a lot of time, like it's not her whole platform, but she certainly spends a lot of time advocating for other Black trans women, trans people in general, but Black trans women, because I'm not a Black trans woman, but I just, they need protection and there needs to be some more visibility raised. Anyway, so I'm just glad to see Maddie there being a part of the club. But anyway, let me get back to the story. So, oh my goodness. And if I don't train myself, if I don't, ooh, this is going to be a long one. Let me try to get this thing succinct. So throughout the movie, Zola, there's a point in the story, she reflects back on the situation as she's recounting it. And she realizes that incident in the car was a major red flag on just generally how weird and trifling this whole situation was going to be based on that conversation. One thing that I gleaned that I don't know that was ever talked about was it feels like Stephanie, who is Jessica in real life, you ever met somebody, if you're Black listening to this, you ever met some, or if you're not Black listening to this, you could probably relate. You ever met somebody who was definitely did not grow up in the hood, did not grow up around Black people talking AA, speaking AAVE, but put on an effect as if they were down, as if they were from the community, as if they had spent a lot of time the character, what's old girl's name? Riley Keough, who plays Stephanie, who's really Jessica. The affect that she puts on sounds to me like a white person who's trying to be, who's putting on. Does that make any sense to you? So have you, or just anyone in general, they don't have to be white, but my experience has always been white. Like growing up in white spaces, people, white kids would come up to me knowing good and well that they don't know anybody black other than me for real. And they would be like, anyway, I was going down, you know what I mean? Like really putting on what they thought a black scent. That's what I'm really trying to say. They would put on a black scent. And the character Stephanie in this film to me sounds like she's putting on a black scent. Cause it definitely sounds like the white kids that I grew up with who were trying to be hard. Definitely the white kids in the Midwest from my travels that I ran into who were trying to be hard, which is not the same as the white kids who definitely grew up around black folks. There's a difference, right? Even if you're not from a particular culture, but you grew up around it, there's a certain cadence you naturally pick up because it's a part of your upbringing, right? It's just something that was a part of your life. There's a difference between someone who adopts naturally a part of the cadence of a culture that they've grown up in, or adjacent to, and then there's a difference between putting on something like a black scent or whatever you would say if somebody is Chicano. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, I know I'm not weird, and I realize if you're not from the United States, I'm starting to say stuff that you probably aren't familiar with, but you can appreciate somebody putting on an affect, putting on an accent that isn't their own and it's forced. Right. So anyway, Stephanie sounds like she's putting on a black scent. And so it's the black scent coupled with what she's this dancer that she's talking about with the nappy hair, and Zola already being tired because they've been on this long old trip. And Zola is just like, girl, if you don't get from around me, let me just come on and make this money. And again, this is told from Zola's perspective, so it's probably not totally, you know what I mean? Again, she admitted freely that she embellished quite a bit, or not quite a bit, but she embellished aspects of the stories. But I don't believe that she was totally not into all of it, but I'm sure that in the travel, there was a ton of red flags. And anyway, red flag number one for her was this whole interaction and how weird Stephanie was being. So they finally get to Florida. And one of the weirdest things that happens is, again, because Jared doesn't really have a place, which is Derek in the film, Derek really doesn't have a place here. The first thing that X does, which is really Z in real life, is drop him off at a hotel, a musty, crusty, dusty hotel at that. It's like a flea bag roach motel. It looked like it had roaches in there. Zola even says in the film, it looks like it has roaches in there. And I remember responding, girl, because it probably do. You've seen them on the side of the road before, like those low rent, low budget motels. They're everywhere, I'm quite sure. Across the globe, they're everywhere. Where a tourist, if you stay there, it was because you were confused and you didn't know where you were going. But by and large, the people that stay there are people who are either doing sex work themselves, they're down on their luck, or they're using it for like some sort of outpost for some illegal activity, right? Like everybody knows the look. And so anyway, this is what they rolled up to. After 20 hours on the road, this raggedy, trashy place is what they rolled up to. And then of course, X is gonna fold Derek into it because, Derek, why are you here? Why are you here? There's really no reason for you to be here. So what X does is throws him in this trashy, raggedy hotel, which, by the way, it was so on point. X brings in a fan, like for real, like a desk fan, into the hotel because it's so raggedy and run down, you know, the air conditioner do not work. So anyway, so he brings in the fan for Derek and Derek, which is Jared in real life. Anyway, and of course Derek freaks out and he starts really acting like, again, he's very codependent, and he starts to act really bratty. And so anyway, they finally leave him, and because again, Zola and Stephanie are going to go dance, and X needs to take them to the dance spot. So anyway, another thing that I learned as they're going to the, as they get to the dance spot, and then I remember reading that apparently you need to have some sort of, not necessarily a permit, but this was in the film, that there needs to be, in order to be fully nude, there, the club itself needs to have a permit. And Zola, in the film, Zola was like, I'm a fully nude dancer. I'm going to get all the way nude. And she did not like the fact that there was a uniform that you had to wear to dance there. But anyway, she plays ball. I didn't realize, again, I haven't been to any strip club, so I don't know. This is just something I would not have ever guessed, but some, depending on your licensure, you know, you can either be fully nude or you can be semi. And so in the case of this particular club where they were dancing, they could be semi. And so they get into their outfit and they dance, and the funniest thing happened. So clearly, first off, the first thing that was funny to me is Zola, when she was going out to dance, she cleaned her own pole, which I would think that there would be somebody that between acts would clean the poles. But if it's like a lower class kind of establishment, maybe that's not a thing that happens. But she sexily cleaned the pole, which, girl, good on you, because you don't want anybody else's, you don't know what anybody else did before you, and you want that thing to be clean. So she like had her a rag and she sprayed something and she sexily cleaned the pole as she was about to, you know, do her thing. And then she begins to dance and she's really cute. And pause here. So I was not expecting, although I should have, if you are an actress or an actor, you get in your role for real. You become real. You get into that thing. If you're really going to try to portray somebody, especially if they're a real person, you get into that thing. And I can remember the only movie about dancers that I can remember was it Striptease with Demi Moore. And anyway, there was a whole big old thing about how they, no, Showgirls. It was Showgirls. And there was a whole big old thing how the women, Demi Moore and the other women that were in it, had to like really get in shape and really train to be a dancer, and how they really put in the hours to be able to be as acrobatic and flexible and entertaining as the women that they had studied for the roles. And so I don't know why I didn't expect Taylor to be really good or entertaining, but she was. And clearly she like really got her thing going, because she looked like she was comfortable she was comfortable dancing, which is a testament to her study. And so anyway, I probably should put a disclaimer. I'm going to put that in the show notes, because it just occurred to me that this is not a conversation for people who are under 18 for real. Anyway, so let me just, anyway, y'all already know, you hear, you already know the routine. But I'm going to put that in the notes, I think. Anyway, but yeah, she's the girl, Taylor Page. She did what needed to be done for this role, because I believed her character for real. I believed Riley's character, but I really believed Zola's. I really believed Taylor, because she just did such a wonderful job. And it's like, not only that, she did a wonderful job of portraying a woman who's a dancer, a young woman who's a dancer. But then more than that, like, we're along for the journey with her. And there's points where she's turning to the camera or talking to the camera or talking over, like her voice is dubbed over a scene where it's freeze framed. And it's just like, girl, we're in on it too. But again, and also throughout the film, there is a, that little whistle, the tweet whistle, which if you keep your phone on mute, like I keep my phone on mute, you might've forgotten what that sounded like, but that's the tweet whistle or the Twitter whistle. Anyway. So yeah, she's dancing. And before she goes on the stage, I should have said this, before she goes on the stage, Stephanie takes a picture of her and she's like, okay, cool. We cute. When Zola gets off the stage, Stephanie takes more pictures of her. Oh, we cute. Come to find out, and she starts to get suspicious, like, girl, why are you taking all these pictures? Come to find out, the reason why she was taking all those pictures is because X
wanted to create a back page for them to make even more money. And pause, in the very beginning, it was clear that there was something weird about the relationship between Stephanie and X that Zola was picking up on, because after she danced, she said, make sure if he asks you in the thread, Zola said that Jessica said, if he asks you how much, he gonna ask you how much money you made. So put your money in your bra. Don't tell him exactly how much you made, because he's gonna ask about it. And she thought that was a little bit odd. And it was right then where she started to get the idea that perhaps X wasn't just a friend. He wasn't just a booker, but he was a little bit more than that to Stephanie, which is Jessica. And so anyway, so she says that, she takes the pictures, and then she says that little scheme. She gives her that little tidbit. Stephanie gives Zola that little tidbit about the money bit. And then here comes X talking about how much money you make, true to form, how much money you make. Just like what Stephanie said. And they both said, oh, not much. And then he's like, okay, cool. Well, we about to go trap, which, and Zola explains in her Twitter thread that trapping in quote unquote stripper language means that you're going to prostitute. You're going to have sex for money. You're going to be a sex worker. You're going to have sex for money. And so anyway, Zola wasn't down for that. She came down to Florida to dance. She came down to Tampa to dance. And so anyway, pause, Backpage. Backpage was a website that was shut down. I believe it was shut down in 2017 because Backpage was a place where you could put ads up about anything, but it typically had been used for sex work. And there were many independent sex workers who advertised their services. And that's how they made their money. If you listen to Marsha's Plate back in 2017, when all of this was going down, when there was this campaign to get rid of Backpage, Mia on Marsha's Plate talked about how that was where she made her money, through advertising through Backpage, because sex work is dangerous. And people don't think about that. And certainly it's something that I've thought about since I've become more aware and more just more knowledgeable and less judgmental about women and the choices that they sometimes are driven to, or sometimes they just want to make because they want to take ownership of themselves. But anyway, sex work is dangerous. And sometimes even in the pimp situation, not only is it that the pimp situation can be abusive and you can be stuck in that cycle, but then going and trying to pick up a quote unquote John is the terminology, a customer on the street, you never know what you're going to pick. And there have been plenty of sex workers who have been robbed by their Johns, who have been abused and beaten by their Johns, and it was clear that their Johns tried to do worse. And so Backpage, according to what Mia was sharing from Marsha's Plate, that Backpage was a way for sex workers to, or people who engaged in sex work, to be able to vet their clients. Like it wasn't a foolproof sort of situation. You could still perpetrate as something you're not right up until you turn out to be the trash person that you actually are, but it was an easier way to do screening. And I can't remember at the time, but there were people who were advocates for people who were in sex work who were trying to say, as a result of being on Backpage, the number of incidences of deaths or tragedies related to sex work in this particular area went way down. And now the Backpage is, as compared to before Backpage was a thing, and now that if you take Backpage away, these folks who are in this industry for one reason or the next are now going to be uber vulnerable to this. And so X putting their picture on Backpage is indicative of the time in 2014. In 2014, 2013, 2012, Backpage was a thing. And again, according to Mia, it was a way to be safer in this very dangerous line of work that people find themselves in. And so anyway, I just wanted to put that little piece out about Backpage. Anyway, I believe in 2017 or 2018, Backpage was sued to pieces, and it was taken, it was demolished because, again, just like anything that's worth, that's useful to anyone. So while there were people who were engaged in sex work that participated and under good pretenses participated on Backpage, there were people who were being trafficked through Backpage because traffickers gonna find the easiest way to traffic, the most lucrative way to traffic people. And so the site was shut down because there was, unfortunately, there were several young people who were trafficked and their traffickers put up a page about them on Backpage, and it was really lucrative for them. So it sucks that there wasn't a way that it could be better vetted. But I think part of the reason why it was so easy for traffickers to put up pages up there because it was literally easy for everyone. Backpage didn't screen who was putting up what and didn't ask a whole lot of questions. They just took the money and allowed for you to put up the page, basically. So anyway, so Backpage has been gone now, but in the time that Zola was recounting this, it was a big thing. And so X had decided, I keep wanting to call dude Domingo, the actor's name is Coleman Domingo, but in this movie, he's playing X, which is really Z in real life, a Nigerian pimp. And so his pimpness comes out. So basically he creates a Backpage without Zola's knowledge and with the help of Stephanie. And this is where Stephanie's being trifling. So, and her true colors, and I'm going to speed this up a little bit because I'm about to go ape. I'm about to go off the wall. So long story short, through the story, what ends up happening is a couple of things. So they end up trapping, but Zola swears up and down that she wasn't engaged in any sexual activity, that it was all Stephanie. Now, Stephanie, who's really Jessica, it was interviewed by the Rolling Stones and shared that Zola, in fact, was engaged in sexual activity. She engaged too, but Jessica didn't want to, or Stephanie in the film, did not want to engage in that. It was Zola's idea, and so she just went along with it. That it really wasn't Z who was, or X in the film, that was the bad guy here. Zola was doing a lot of this foolishness, which, again, the truth is somewhere in the middle. Because again, Zola is not the most reliable narrator, but at the same time, it feels like this is probably the order of events. So anyway, they make a bunch of money trapping, especially when Zola begins to charge more for Johns to be with Stephanie. And then there's a point where through Derek's, or Jared in real life's, just bumbling idiocy, they all leave the hotel where they were trapping and go back to the hotel where they left Derek. And Derek has befriended this somebody who look like he up to no good, because he is up to no good. And flash forward, they get out because X tells them they gotta go because Derek has made it hot for them. Like Derek told this guy that his girl and her friend are going to go strip and make money. And now that they know that they're gonna come back with a bunch of money, of course they're ripe to be robbed. So X gets them all out of there and they go to a different hotel, which is much nicer. And so anyway, they continue to trap. And it's clear that Zola is not having a good time. She wants to go home. They won't let her go home until they're finished, which is at the end of the weekend. And so she's along for the ride. And at this point, she's sticking around Stephanie, which is Jessica in real life, because X has asked, X has demanded that Zola look out for Stephanie while she's trapping. And so anyway, so they go out, they're called to this one hotel and it feels like it's one of the last hotels that they go to where they're, Stephanie's going to trap. And surprise, surprise, it's a trap. And who should be the person that trapped them but the people that Derek had befriended and told all their business. So what happens is Zola and Stephanie go to the door, but Stephanie gets snatched through the door and Zola runs off and she goes and gets X, and then they come back and X is in the room And so somehow or another, Derek, which is played, which is really Jared in real life, his punk behind gets in the room too. And anyway, there is a standoff between X and the guy that gooped Derek to get the information. Meanwhile, back at the ranch, Stephanie is knocked out and in the corner. So this is a dark comedy, but it's also full of abuse. They literally beat her unconscious. They knocked her unconscious and literally had big old fat nasty guns for the purpose of robbing them blind. But again, somehow or another, in this magical, fantastic story, X ends up getting a drop on the would-be robbers and ends up shooting dead one of the robbers. And it's funny in the movie, but the reality of it is the guy really did, according to the story, the guy died. So anyway, or he was wounded pretty badly. And so anyway, so they leave and it's the end of this thing and they're finally finished. And apparently X has this lavish home in Tampa with this weird woman who is either his fiance, his boo, or his wife, whatever. And maybe she's into sex work, maybe she's not. But she's looks kind of ridiculous in the film. Like it looks like she's been modified, like her body has been modified, which I'm not shaming that. It's just she looks like a computer generated like kind of doll. You know what I mean? Like, have you ever seen someone who's modified their body to the point where, or like, no, case in point, Barbie, like her hips are super wide, but her waist is super tiny and her feet are tiny too. Like this woman, it looks like she's modified. Maybe she's not, but, and then her face just looks like she's, This actress looks a little weird, but I don't know who she is, but you know, get your money, boo. Anyway, so long story short, at the end of this whole thing, Zola's had it. Somehow or another, Jared ends up jumping from the balcony of X's place. X's wife pulls a gun out on Jared and tells him to, or which is Derek in the film, and tells him to jump, and he do jump. And they end up at the end of the film, they're essentially about to go back to Detroit. And Derek is bleeding from his head because he jumped and he cracked his head on this on the pavement. Jessica is Stephanie. You know, she's just there kind of looking like she made some money, but all the money went to X. So what's really did she show for it? And somehow or another, even though Zola is like ready, had been ready to go, she'd been ready to go for hours, this Sunday afternoon, this Sunday morning, she's left with a lot of money, which I don't know. Again, I don't know if that's totally true. Some aspects of this are not true. It has to be not true. And they're totally embellished, as she has said. But the whole point of what we learn is the whole point of Stephanie being a part of this is because she's trying to get her baby back. What we know is that in real life, her baby was taken from her because she grew up in a poor, she grew up, she was a daughter of a teenage mother. And her home environment was not stable. She was in and out of trouble her whole life. She got pregnant. And unfortunately, because she did not have the means, she could not, her child was taken from her. And so this whole scenario, it seemed like, and a piece that I missed, that Stephanie, who's Jessica, has gotten other women to go down to Florida with her when she goes to make money as a means of being able to get her daughter back, which is a whole other piece there and definitely worth exploring at another point. But this movie was just, it was more organized than the Twitter thread, the story thread. But it was still chaotic and it was very entertaining. I did not talk about nearly half of the funny things that happened. I more so focused on some of the like the bigger issues that happened. But the movie was very entertaining, very well acted, specifically well acted by Taylor. Well acted by everyone, but very well acted by Taylor Page, who's with Jesse Williams, that fine man. Anyway, and so, yeah, so it's a very interesting film. It's also touching on a lot of things in real life. If nothing else, I hope that it encourages folks to look into human trafficking, to really understand more about the things that young women and just young people can get themselves engaged with and try to support causes that try to help folks who are caught up. Because if you are dancing and you're making money because you want to, that's your business. But one of the things, the through lines of this movie is it's not 100% clear that Stephanie, who's really Jessica in real life, was doing this because she wanted to. And so, and it's clear that X, which is really Z, was a pimp and he was into some weird stuff. And he was probably, he was definitely trifling. So anyway, there's this movie, if nothing else, it's entertaining, but then it also makes you think about a lot of different things. So I encourage you to look up Backpage. I encourage you to look up dancing and just understand human trafficking more. And the ways in which people can get caught up and support organizations that are trying to help people who want to get out of those situations or who to help people get out of those situations, not want to get out. Quite sure a lot of people want to get out but can't. So anyway, yeah, it's definitely a movie worth seeing. Right now it's in theaters. I don't know if A24 is going to, like, if Netflix is going to pick it up or any streaming service is going to pick it up. So you might just want to, you know, go see it at a theater near you or however you get to see it. Anyway, that's it. I've talked long enough. This is a long episode, but I hope it was entertaining for you. Thank you so much for listening. I said this at the top of the show, but I'll say it again. Thank you so much for listening. I know I ramble a lot and I know I'm all over the place, but I really do appreciate you listening to the show, sharing this episode with somebody that you think might enjoy it. If you have any questions or comments about it or other information to add, definitely in the show notes, there's a link that you can click that'll take you to my anchor.fm page where you can leave me a voice message. I'll listen to it and I'll respond to it. If you feel so inclined to rate the show, rate it 4 stars or better, I really would appreciate it. If you leave a message, if you care to leave a message, if it's a positive message, I will definitely read it. I will honor that sacrifice. So thank you so much. Depending on when you're listening to this, I hope you have a wonderful morning, afternoon, evening. I hope you can get that task accomplished. I hope you can just chill and do nothing. I hope if you're not feeling well now, that I hope you begin to feel better and that you can have a wonderful weekend, depending on when you're listening to this, and that you feel loved and you feel supported, or you will soon feel loved and supported. So I appreciate you. Have a wonderful day. Until next time.